So for those that are new, our Whosoever Nights are nights that we get to interview someone and kind of hear about their life and things like that. I've been waiting to do Sylvia for quite a while now, so this is exciting because I get to interview her. We've done these before. You got to kind of face them, though. You can't face... I like this one. This is kind of weird. anyway, it's been a while. We've done podcasts together, which was cool. Has anybody heard our podcast before, me and Sylvia's podcast? She did good. I mean, we did a podcast. It was very cool. Very cool. It was a little candid. It'll probably be more candid than this interview. So that's more of the, you know, that's more the other rated, you know. So if you want to hear the other rated side, you might want to go to that one, you know. Podcast, all you do is go to runninglight.org and then go to, I think it's like Lessons Podcast, and there we go. And we're there. You guys should know all this by now. You guys should be getting this every week, just podcasting all the time. I'm just joking. We're going to start off with Sylvia's kind of her background, her life, where she grew up, where her family's from, and things like that. And it should be fun. And then we want to, you know, we want you guys to ask, you know, questions too. So you can always interject if you want to ask her questions. You know, she's got amazing wisdom, this woman. So no, I'm putting her on the spot. But it'd be great if you guys want to interject anything. You certainly can. Okay. So. Sylvia, let's first thank you for being here. I've interviewed a lot of people, but I'm really excited to interview you. And you're very pretty, so I'm glad you're hanging out with me. Where'd you grow up? Where was that at? You got to talk into the mic.
Ventura County, Simi Valley, small little town. But my family was from like Watson, Compton, and. So every week when we would go up there and hang out with my grandparents and...
What was it like hanging out with this hardcore Mexican family?
Well, I didn't know they were hardcore Mexican family. That was my family. I didn't until I got older and then realized, you know, there was a difference in Simi Valley versus L.A. and...
Yeah.
You know, things like that, but...
What was it like visiting, though, over there when you went and visited your family and... you were a little girl. You were used to more Ventura County, so there was a lot of...
Yeah, it was different. Our family knew that we were different because we moved away from L.A., and you kind of don't do that, like, with family. So my dad was the first one to move away. So we kind of were looked at as, like, I guess, like snobby, you know?
Like the snobby Mexican family.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, that's just from what
That's how
heard.
I saw you. No, I'm just joking.
Yeah, right. No.
I saw her as the snobby Mexican crew.
We were looked at differently from our cousins and things like that because, you know, we'd go back into L.A. every weekend and we dressed different, looked different.
Yeah.
You know, that we weren't into what they were into and stuff.
Yeah, what did you learn about, and the reason why I like to ask those questions is because kind of like, what did you learn from your family, like, growing up, and what did you get from them moving away from L.A.? What were they trying to do?
That you should be afraid.
You should be afraid.
You should be afraid of life.
Did they have a lot of fear?
A lot, yeah, a ton.
They still do.
Yeah, they're better, but... Yeah.
What do I always joke with your dad about?
Locking the car in the driveway.
Yeah. It's so funny, man. Her parents live in the most, light white community you're going to ever get in the world. And out here in Tucson. I mean, compared to where they live, I live in the ghetto. Man, my house is like from 1960. I think it was built, slab house. They got this beautiful home and everything like that. And it's like he goes like out to the curb and he like locks his door practically every time. And I'm like, dude, why are you locking your door? And I've always told him that. I mean, when we moved out here, he bought a home that was being built and there was no other homes in the lot yet. And his house was built and he would lock his door. And I'd be like, dude, no one's like around here. Like, why are you locking your door? He's like, dude, you got to lock your door. Like every time. And your parents have like Watts and Compton did something to them.
Well, yeah.
I mean, and it does something to anybody who's living in those areas, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because your dad went through the Watts riots. Mm-hmm. And you guys are too young to remember those. You guys weren't even born. But there was the Watts riots that were really huge, racial riots in Los Angeles. Even when me and Syl were younger, there was riots in L.A. that took place all the time. Especially, I don't know if you guys probably don't even remember, there was an incident with a guy named Rodney King who was beat by the cops. And then after that, even Ice Cube did a song about the trial actually for Rodney King was going to be in the town that me and Syl grew up mostly in Simi Valley. And but there was riots going on all the time out there. So they had a lot of fear. So what did that do to you growing up? I mean, how did that affect you? All their fear from living in inner city Los Angeles?
Well, I think it hindered, you know, obviously friendships and I think because there was so much fear, the need to show love, I think, was overshadowed a lot of the time. So, you know, me and my sisters were always trying to figure out, like, do our parents even, like, love us? Like, do they like us? Or, 'cause I think they were just so fearful of, you know, us, you know, getting taken or things getting stolen or, but, like, hardcore violent stuff, like, stuff as the baby in the family was, like, what does that even mean? Like, what's kidnapping? What's rape? What's, like, you know, and there was constant fighting and...
You had two older siblings?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I mean, you just grow up around fighting, and then you're trying to figure out, well, where do I fit? How do I fit in here? You know, and then you just start kind of looking for love in all the wrong places. You know,
okay, so how did that happen? Let's go up to when you're 20 years old and you find love in all the wrong places. No, I'm just joking.
By then I had no games. By then I was
good. So yeah, so tell me, what does that mean, finding love in all the wrong places? What happened to you?
Well, my parents they fought a lot. They were violent. They hit us a lot. There was a lot of abuse, mental, physical, things like that. And so by the time I was 12, you know, and put in public school.
Public school.
Actually, I was 11. Yeah, my mom lied to get me into school a year early, so I was always like a year and a half behind. So I was 11 in seventh grade, and so you know, everyone else was like 13, and I was like 11. You know, and I was just like.
And let me tell you, this is Sylvia lived. When I moved into Simi Valley, I moved four houses down from Sylvia. And I just remember Sylvia being like so quiet and she just so shy. She walked all like, you know, and in junior high, I just remember you like, it seemed like you were always like in this little shell, like this little world. But tell us kind of what, I mean, from the outside, from me being in your junior high and looking at Sylvia, we thought it was one way. We thought, oh, Sylvia was, you know, Sylvia's just a shy girl. But what really, you know, what happened in your life?
Like, what do you mean what happened in my life?
You know, what happened in your life when you were 12?
Oh. Well, I just met the wrong people and thought, wow, these people think I'm, you know, I'm pretty or I'm nice. And I just come from Catholic school and... You know, where everyone kind of gets along. You're in the same grade. You feel protected. And then my mom wanted to put me in public school, thinking, well, I don't want her left behind or, you know, things like that. And it was just so overwhelming to me. Like, kids were smoking in the corners and, you know, they had drugs everywhere.
Those drugs.
It was a complete, I mean, seventh graders. Like, seventh graders. I was like, wow, where did these kids come from? So I was like afraid to be there, but yet I was friendly and I was outgoing, and so that I was an easy target, I think, just for, you know, to get taken advantage of, or didn't know how to say no, you know. I wanted to fit in, and so by the time I was 12, I was already sexually active, doing drugs and drinking and thinking, okay, this is interesting.
So when you first had your first sexual experience at 12 years old, I mean, what was that like? 12 years old, man, that's young.
You know, it's like I think of that for like my own kids, and I just think, man, how scary. You know, but I wasn't thinking that in my head. You know, I was just thinking, people like me. Like, this is love.
That's how you looked at it,
yeah,
from your perspective.
Like, this is acceptance.
Yeah, people
this
love
is,
you, people
this is love,
you.
This is, I'm part of a group. You know, my parents are crazy, and I get hit here, and I don't get hit here. You know, as a kid, you're just trying to, put a puzzle together.
Yeah.
You know, even mm-hmm. though that's craziness as an adult, you know, I couldn't imagine my kids coming to me and telling me that. I'd be like, what are you thinking? You know, but when you're a kid growing up like that, that's what makes sense to you. And you're drawn to where you think kindness is, you know? And
yeah. Did you, you know, you were raised a Catholic. Do you think you had a, like, what kind of walk with God did you have at that young age? I mean, here you're sexually active at 12. You're being taken advantage of by guys. Guys that I know. I mean, these are dudes that I knew. I was in the school.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, what? Me and Syl got a unique life, don't we? Just being together this long. What was your life with God like?
Mm. You know? Well, I think there was a lot of guilt. I mean, growing up in the Catholic Church, God is like big and you're little. And, you know, you have to go to confession to receive the body and blood of Christ. And, you know, you have to confess everything or else you can't go. You're still dirty. You're still not acceptable. And
So you always felt like that, like you weren't even accepted by God unless you did something.
There was just guilt. And then you come, you know, you're one way in church with the family, and then the family is like all aggro during the week, and then Sunday everyone's got their best faces on, and then things return. So I learned
aggro's
the hypocrisy.
Aggro is an old word that means like nuts. Like, you know, that's aggro, that's crazy. So you guys are like, aggro, what's that? That's kind of an old Southern California word.
So I learned young that there's a lot of hypocrisy, even though I wouldn't have known what that word meant. I just learned that, oh, okay, I get it. Like, you know.
Yeah. Did you have a walk with God? Like, did you pray? And
I did. You know what? I had a great prayer life. That was, I found so much comfort in that.
So that was like your lifeline?
It was.
Just the praying to God.
Just praying.
Were you a kid that, did you cry a lot?
Yeah, I would cry myself to sleep all the time praying, but there was so much peace in it.
Yeah, what was the worst things your parents did? I mean, did they just beat you down? I mean, what did they do?
Yeah, well, I think some of the most, I think, compelling things that still stand out today are when they found out that I was sexually active. As if I wasn't already broken myself.
Yeah.
You know, they broke me more.
Did they find out or how did, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, they found, the school called and found letters in my locker and in his locker.
Back then we wrote letters to one another. We wrote
these
things.
Texting.
Yeah, we actually folded them up really cool and everything.
Because the guy that I was involved with was bringing guns to school and drugs and everything. So his locker got checked. They read a whole bunch of letters that pointed to me, and then those letters were shown to my mom. And so by the time I got home, everything was scattered all over a table, and I knew that I was found out. And my mom said, let's go, let's get in the car. So I'm like, okay, where are we going? I didn't ask because I was so afraid. But she took me to Supercuts, and she grabbed the boys haircut book, just opened it randomly and pointed to a boy's haircut and said, "She wants this one." So I just went in shock, and this lady's looking at me. She knows something's up.
Sylvia always, by the way, Sylvia had hair down to there, and it was all like flowy and locky and like very pretty.
Yep, so it was gone, like, you know, in a matter of a half hour, and I had like the shortest cut. I think it was like similar to yours, you know?
Aaron.
she had the cut. You just kind of sit through it, and... So
I remember you going to school and had like little barrettes or something in your hair.
I don't even remember.
And I'm just like, whoa, dude, Sylvia got a haircut.
Oh, my God.
But we had no clue, by the way. You know, in the school, we had no clue what was going on in her life.
Yeah.
And the trauma this poor young girl was going through, right? Being taken advantage of. You know, unfortunately, in the lust culture of Southern California, you live in this lust culture where a lot of us young guys think that that's okay. So we don't know the trauma we're putting her through. And then she goes through the trauma of getting her hair chopped off. But that's not the end. I mean, and then it just kept going, huh?
Mm-hmm.
This kind of abuse?
Yeah. My dad didn't talk to me for months. Right after I got my hair cut, my mom said, "Now everyone's going to know. Everyone's going to look at you. They all know, you know, and what are you good for now?" And I remember those words like sticking with me, like even to this day. I'm just like,
yeah. Like, whoa.
Yeah.
Because like, you think intense. As a mom, like, dude, I would never say this to my kid.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, how do you undo that? You know, I couldn't imagine saying that to our daughter, you know, or anybody, you know, what are you good for now? Like, no one's going to want you.
Did it continue? Was it just like a constant berating of verbal assaults on you?
Yeah. From then on, it pretty much was. My dad, he was so broken. I remember my mom made me watch him break down and cry.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you're so close to your mom and dad now. That it's kind of amazing to think about it. You know, but that's the cool thing about your story is that there's an amazing reconciliation. Because this is important for you guys to know about Sylvia, is this didn't just happen like, it didn't just happen and then it was over in your life.
This
was something that happened, you know, their fear of growing up the way they did and all the fear that they had in them, and because they didn't really have God in their life, they didn't know how to act about that fear, and they tried to control you girls, and it didn't work, and things got out of control, and the way they handled that out of control feeling was through get more control, and the way they tried to do that was through anger and manipulation, and so when they started this kind of torrent of abuse, you know, what we didn't know in school is that this thing just kept going on and on and on. I'm talking like years.
Mm-hmm.
This kept going on. And we would always wonder, like, we'd always have these thoughts about Sylvia. We're always like, you know, why is she still pulls away. You know what I mean? She kind of pulled away from everybody. Why didn't she hang with us? You know, why didn't she, you know, and she just kind of lived in her own little, you can tell there was like stuff going on in the brain, but you know, you're young and you know, what are you going to do? Sit down with her and be Mr. Dr. Phil? You know, there it's like, you know, back then we didn't have Dr. Phil, man. We didn't know we were supposed to do that, you know? So it's like, you know, we just kind of just always thought like, man, it'd be cool. So it's cool. Like, I wonder why she got short hair. I wonder why she's so quiet now. I wonder why she, you know, it's like you really shelled up. And even when you were with your friends, and even when we got into high school, you still were kind of like, you had all your friends, Tamora, Johnny, all your friends that kind of were the boom, the bubbly ones. And then you were always the real kind of chill one.
Right.
You know, how long were you grounded?
Well, I know for one long span was like 3 years, but I mean, I literally don't remember a time where I felt free, like there was freedom, like, okay, you know, to say, hey, can I go and spend the night somewhere? Because then my mom would say, like, oh, you're a slut, you want to go sleep around. And
could you imagine saying that to your kid? Could you imagine calling your daughter a slut? Holy moly, right? 3 years being grounded. Dude, I don't even know what, I wouldn't even know what that's like at all. Now, is that abuse? What do you guys think?
Yes.
Dude, that's some crazy, I'd say that's kind of up there, right? Grounding a kid for 3 years? How would you guys take that? Well, guess what? Sylvia pulled up her bootstraps and said, at one point. And what happened? What did you do? I mean, you ended up doing what?
Well, I finally ran away the first time. And
how old were you when you ran away?
I just turned 17. But before that, I had looked into getting emancipated and tried to find papers to do that. And I mean, it was just a constant thing of fear. You know, I lived in a constant
bubble.
Yeah, just stayed.
And then when you ran away, where'd you go?
I went to a friend's house. I even continued seeing a priest that I was seeing from our church, who was actually a really great guy. I mean, I'd never met a priest like this. He would meet with me, and he would just let me talk. And he would actually share his life with me. And I was like, this is really weird. He's a priest. Like, he's talking about when he was a kid and all this stuff. And he was just really encouraging, and he's like, I would love for you to eventually, like, talk to our youth group, you know? And I'm like,
to talk to
me?
Him?
Yeah.
Isn't that a trip?
Yeah, like he saw something, you know? This was like somebody that I looked up to that saw something, but then I would go home and it would be like, you know.
It's amazing how a little positiveness, huh, goes a long way in a young person's life, just affirmation. Just saying, hey, you're okay, you know, it's amazing how we need to hear that.
Yeah.
So you heard that, and then you ran away, you came back home.
Yep.
And I'm sure they treated you great.
Well, I came back home under this priest was helping us, and he said, hey, you know what, don't go back home until it's safe. Like, don't go home until you talk to me first. So, I told him, I said, well, I think I'm ready to go home. And he said, okay, I'm going to meet with your parents. We'll get this stuff going. We'll start counseling and things like that. And I was getting hopeful. I was like, okay, this is good. This will be good. And
and did you graduate high school by this time?
Yeah, I graduated early.
Okay, so tell him the story of what happened in high school, why we didn't talk.
Oh, because my
this
sister,
is your side of the story, which they always hear my side. So
yeah, like you had called the house one day to talk to me, and it was all great. Hung up the phone, and then my sister comes running in, and is like, "You know, Bo asked me to the prom, right?" And I was all confused.
This is her older sister by 2 years.
And I was confused, and I was like, "Well, no, that's weird," because I knew you didn't go to those things anyway. So Barbara was like, Mom, Bo asked me to the prom, and he's supposed to be seeing Sylvia, and you have to tell him, like, this is just wrong. And so my mom gets all, like, you know, PO'd, and she's like, Sylvia.
And your mom's feisty.
She's very feisty.
She can lay it down.
So she goes, Sylvia, you're going to go to school tomorrow, and you're going to walk up to Bo, and you're going to say, I never want to talk to you again. And you better walk away, and that better be all you say to him, because I'm going to know. So I said, okay. So next day at school, I walked up to him, and I said, I never want to talk to you again.
And I remember I remember walking where I walked.
Yeah, I know.
I remember exactly
I remember
where
the
it
look
was.
On your face.
And that's how
was
traumatic
like,
it was to me. I was like, holy moly, I'm going to remember this forever.
Well, and we do.
I know, it's so crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you came up to me and told
yep,
me that.
Yep, so we
I
didn't
would,
talk for would, 3 years, yep. And that was
And it was so
that.
Funny what you said. What you said was so comical. I think I just went like, ha, ha, like, ha.
Yeah.
And then you walked away, and I was like, did that really just happen?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe it. Because I don't go to the prom. I never went to a prom.
Yeah.
The only prom I went to was my senior prom because I was prom king. And so I had to go. They made me go to the prom. Yeah. So, because I never went to the prom. So it was really odd that I would ask her sister, who was a year older than me, to the prom since it wasn't my prom and I don't go to proms. So unfortunately, I couldn't explain that to her because Sylvia just was like, oh, my mom told me to tell you that I can't talk to you no more, so I can't talk to you, okay? And I'm like, okay. That was it. And I was like, okay, bye-bye. So I didn't talk to you for, I don't know, 2-3 years.
Yeah, it was 3 years.
Something like that. Even though I saw you, it was like, hey, didn't even say hey, because I was like, shh, I'm in the doghouse, man.
Yeah.
So,
come to find out, my sister lied, by the way. She confessed that she lied. And
20 years later.
Yeah, 20 years later.
Yeah, something like
that. She said, I just didn't want you hanging out with him, so I lied, and I knew Mom would believe me because no one ever believed you. So that was the end of that one.
Yeah. So you ran away your second time. When was that?
I had just turned 19. No, I was 18. I was 18, and this time I went to go live with another friend. And then I ended up moving in with my sister.
Tell them about your sister's house.
Oh, God.
You're like, oh, God.
When the police are afraid to go into someone's house, you know it's not a great place to be.
When at this time in my life, I was like in graffiti crews. I was doing a bunch of raves. I was spinning records. Of course, playing my guitar. I was a prime guitar player, but I was on a lot of drugs too. And the dudes that were in our crew that were like the fighter dudes. I mean, the dudes that were brawling. Jesse Rosen, Kevin Bryles, these kind of guys that were big, can be mean dudes. They would go into her house and be like, what the heck is going on in here? Because you had some funky stuff in that house.
Yeah. There was like an artist and then...
Like a few of them, huh?
Yeah, there was like a couple artists, guys. They were all guys, my sister.
But they weren't painting like, you know, the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah. No, it was all very dark. There was tarp covering the walls. Like every wall was covered in tarp. They had mannequins in the lofts, like half mannequins dressed in like leather.
It was sadomasochistic, man.
You know, TVs everywhere playing different things.
Different things. We will say that.
Different things.
Different things were on the TV. We're going to just leave it right there. Okay?
Yeah, it was
different things.
It was an interesting place.
Different things are playing on the TV. It's one of those houses you walk into and you're like, oh man, dude, like what do they do in here, man? This is bizarro. I mean, it was a little awkward, and this is where little Sylvia was living.
Yeah.
So you were in there hanging out, and me and you started dating.
Yeah, you came back from Hawaii. Well, when I ran away that time, that's when you left too.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So,
I left you.
So I was all alone. Bo leaves the second time I ran away from home.
We were dating that year.
Yeah, we were
before
dating.
I left.
Uh huh. So Bo just.
And what kind of influence was I in your life? Good, bad. What was the good? What was the bad? What was the ugly?
Well, I mean, coming from where I was coming from, you were a great influence, mm-hmm. You know, but...
Yeah, I wasn't hitting you.
No, but I mean, I could see why you needed to leave. I think I was more the bad influence on you.
So from your perspective, what was it like when, I mean, you cared for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to quite treat you too well at times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? What did that mean to you? When I say that, what does that mean? Like, what does that mean to you when I say I didn't treat you as well as I should have?
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't know if you, like, cared for me. I mean, I remember kind of thinking, like, he kind of seems indifferent, you know, like you're not fully engaged, you know, like yeah. You just felt off.
I had a lot on my mind, Sylvia.
I know.
My life was going out of control.
And but I see, like, I understood that. I knew that too. I mean,
yeah, I was indifferent.
No, yeah. Yeah. And
so
I
that means sometimes she would come
at.
Over my house, and I would just go in my room and just be all. And she'd be in my, just hanging out in somewhere. I didn't even know where she was in my house. She's just hanging out. I didn't even care. I was just like, oh, what's up, girl? How's it going? I never said I loved you. Mm-mm. I never said anything like that. She was, I was that guy who, you know, tried to just be that kind of hard guy, you know? And I was deadly afraid, like, to actually open up and just surrender kind of all my yuck, you know, at this time. So I was coming to know Jesus. You knew that. I was mm-hmm. starting to learn about the Bible. I was excited about that.
Right. Well, when I finally ran into you again after 3 years, you had said you'd gotten baptized. So I knew there was something different.
Yeah. So when I told you I had to leave, and I wasn't doing too well for you in your life, I didn't feel like I was helping you that much, and I should probably go away. Mm-hmm. What was kind of your thought?
Well, my initial thought, I think, was just kind of selfish, like, he's going to leave me, you know, but then I thought, like, this is good, you know, you needed that, and I needed that.
And, you know, the amazing thing about the wisdom that God gave Sylvia is, like, from my perspective, she was so gentle on me. You were so gentle on me. I mean, you could have easily said something like, I don't want you to go. You know, please don't go. Never. Never did those things come out of her mouth. I mean, here she ran away her second time. She could have been totally wrapped up in her world. I have no place to go, Bo. I don't want to stay at Mannequin House forever. You know, it's like, I need you here. Like, I need someone here. She could have totally said those things, but she totally was selfless and was just like, you know, she was crying, but she was like, it's okay. Like, okay. You know, and then she said something really radical. I don't even know if you remember saying what you said, but I broke up with her. At that moment, I sat, you know, when we were having this talk, I said, hey, you can date who you want to date. And I said, you know, I'm just going to let you go and you can just be. And you looked at me and you said, no, I want to be with you. And in my mind, I was like, holy crud. Like this girl loves me. And in my heart, I was like excited. I was like, dude, that is awesome. I don't know girls like this. The girls I knew, there was a reason we called them hoochies. You know, and I didn't know this kind of love and compassion and commitment and this kind of grace, you know. And so when she said that, I was just like, holy moly. So inside I was just like, that's awesome. You know, but I couldn't say it. I couldn't like show my feelings. Like most guys, we're too afraid of that, afraid we're going to get hurt. And so there I am in the airport. I remember being in the mm-hmm. plane. I remember seeing you with my dad, you know, when I left. And then what was your life like when I took off?
I think that was when the battle began of just finally deciding, you know, I'm either gonna live for me or I'm gonna live for God. You know, I think I had, you know, just enough of being a follower and being afraid. My biggest fear was being alone. You know, that was my biggest fear, and I think that was what got me into a lot of trouble being young and not having my parents to confide in or to really just talk to, or you know. So I gravitated, you know, to whatever I could, you know. But by
what
this time,
it? What was the things you gravitated to?
Well, I mean,
these people want to know.
Yeah, drugs, sex. I mean, alcohol. It was anything. I think that the world can offer, and because it's easy to obtain, a lot of people are enjoying it, and you kind of all go down the same road, you know?
It's, and at this point, I was kind of like on an island trying to get my head together, right?
Yeah.
And I was writing you letters.
Yeah.
And I had a ton of fear.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what were my letters like?
You always mentioned like buying a gun and like
shooting people.
Yeah, it was weird. I was wondering what the heck is this about?
I got jumped twice.
Well, yeah, that was that was like a year period.
Uh huh.
Yeah, yeah. You had a ton of fear, you know, for stuff like that,
yeah.
and was understandable.
Yeah, and so I would write these crazy letters of like, when I go back there and we hang out, I'm gonna make sure I'm ready to go. Kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, coming out of that graffiti crew culture, mm-hmm. where, and then we're raving for, you know, all those years you're in inner city Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
you see so many things, you know,
yeah.
in that culture that is not normal to what so many people would think is normal, you know,
right.
you live in a world of violence and you're around a world of violence. And all of a sudden, it kind of gets on you, where all of a sudden you get
right.
the brunt end of the stick. You know, you get beat down, and you're vulnerable. And so I felt like I had to learn how to defend myself better. You know, because one time I got jumped by four guys, and then
mm-hmm.
the other time I got jumped by eight guys. And, you know, that obviously was playing a role in those letters,
right?
You know,
yeah.
So no, then when I came back from, you know, you're trying to figure it out, we finally part, so we're alone, we're both alone,
mm-hmm.
we're both learning actually to make these decisions about God. Is God really worth it? Is God really everything in our life? Am I okay in God? Do I need Sylvia, or do I really need God?
Mm-hmm.
Those were thoughts that kept coming to my mind when I was on the island. Is Jesus enough? Am I satisfied in Christ? You know, those kind of thoughts. So when I came back to the island, I was kind of geared up with this idea of
mm-hmm.
either we're going to marry or we're going to not. So how did you see it when I came back?
Well, I mean, I think I saw a lot of the change in the letters from like letter one to the last letter.
It was
like,
I
have them.
Do you?
I have them. Yeah. I just got to find them. But, it was kind of like this evolution of Bo of just being like very fearful and then starting to talk about a relationship with God and what that felt like and what it looked like, and then his attitude towards me changed and he started saying I love you. And I remember looking at that first letter of him ending it saying I love you and just kept looking at it and looking on the cover like, is this for me? And
because from your background of not really being loved, it probably was...
Love stood out.
There was
no doubt. Love's going to stand out. Like, and that was different. That was the first time I had actually, in this case, read it, but it came alive. It was like something's happening. Because you were talking about this changed life, and I, from letter one to this midpoint, it was like, this is different. Something's different. And I felt it. And so you were dialoguing with me through your letters, and I remember that. And there was just crazy stuff happening to me while you were away of you know, me needing to make a decision. So, you know, my friendships there were intensifying. There were more guys coming at me, and I was with Bo. I was committed to Bo, so there was no, you know, sexual experiences with anybody outside of that at all. And but everything just started attacking me. It just started intensifying. And and there was this moment when me and my friends went and did like camping on the beach, and I just felt drained. I just felt like this can't be my life forever. You know, this is my second time running away. Bo's life is changing. I feel stuck. Everything was just dark, you know, in my life. And so, like, in the distance, like, not even 100 yards away, like, people start clapping, you know, and like there's music and there's clapping and they're coming onto the beach. And so I kind of just walk over to see what's going on, and they're having a baptism. Like, these people are getting baptized, and this old man is walking in, and he's getting baptized, and everyone's clapping for him. And then this little kid gets baptized, and I'm just like, wow, this is, like, so cool, you know? And then, like, while that's going on, not even 100 yards to my right, these divers that were taking, like, a training course or something, they were taking this class. They had already went in the water, and one guy was coming up by himself, and he was in distress. Like, I think something happened to his tank, and he ended up dying, like, right in front of us. And just, I mean, it was a violent death. And in my mind, I was just thinking, man, this is my choice. This is my decision. This is what I've come to, is like, I can choose God, and I can live. You know, I heard you in your writings, like, that was you. You know, you were rededicating your life, you know. Or I could die. I could choose what I'm in, and I can stay the same, fearful, always wondering, do people really love me? Does my family really love me? Do I really love my family? Do I really love myself? And yeah, and then within that time is when you, within that month, you came back home. And then, yeah, you gave kind of me the ultimatum of, hey, I'm going to serve Christ. And it'd be great if you serve Christ with me, but if you don't, we can part and be friends. That's cool, you know. And
did you hear that? Did you hear what she's saying? That's how it went down.
Yeah, you sat me down and just said, you know, I'd love to serve the Lord with you and get married. You know, but
that's how I started talking now. Isn't that crazy? All of a sudden, dude, my brain went flink, and I just went like, Jesus.
Right. But it wasn't odd because he was writing letters. So yeah. So it made sense for you to come back and sit me down and
no
say
No joke,
this.
I sat her down.
Yeah, so, yes, huh. You sat me down.
And I'm like, we got to talk. It was so serious, though. I remember it was like, Sylvia.
Well, yeah.
I want to serve like Jesus. And like, I love for you to serve Jesus with me. And if we do it, it'll be awesome. Mm-hmm. We'll get married. It'll be cool.
Yeah, I remember.
But if not, then guess what? That's okay. It just means the Lord's not in this.
Right.
And I was like, totally free. I felt so free. I felt like, man, I'm free. Like, I don't feel like I'm in bondage to anything here.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I'm going to make you do anything. I just was like saying, you want to hop aboard the Jesus train with me kind of thing. Man, let's do this thing. And if not, that's cool. You're my friend. I love you. Mm-hmm. You know? And what'd you say?
I said, yeah, I want to serve Christ with you.
And I was like, whoa, dude, that's hardcore. Isn't that amazing how sometimes when you just take a step of faith, man, and you just do it, you get your crud out of the way and you just take a step of faith, God just does something crazy. And little did we know what God was going to do in our life.
Yeah.
How amazing, stinking, crazy, freaky amazing it's been.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of a sudden within like a couple months, it was a couple months from that meeting, we were married.
Yeah, 3 weeks later we were married.
3 weeks later.
Yeah. And I think that's the most interesting part because
wonderful.
We still see Pastor Dave Guzik, who married us. That's the church that I got saved in. And we asked him, like, just a couple years ago, why did you marry us? We had no business. Like, we were the lead. If Dr. Phil sat us down, he would be like, look, read my book several times and then come back to me, you know, give it like 3 years. I mean, here I was, two-time runaway. I even went back to my parents and I said, hey, I'm a Christian. Bo and I are going to get married. I'd love for you to be there. Now, I knew they were going to reject me. I knew it. But that's what God wanted me to do. He wanted me to just humble myself and say, this is the beginning of the reconciliation.
And it was amazing because Sylvia, all of a sudden, this little girl with all this fear, right? All this unlove, all of a sudden, when I finally led in Christ, dude, it gave like the confidence of Jesus got in her. I was blown away. She was going to her parents' house to tell them about us getting married. I knew very well they wanted to kill me. If I went with her, they were gonna drop me, man, so fast. Yeah. And Syl's like, no, I want to go. And I was just like floored. I was like, wow, dude, how did this girl in such a quick time go from this little shy, you know, thing to all of a sudden she's just like, I'm gonna go talk to him. And she was like so confident about it. Like, I'm like, whatever they say is whatever they say, but I know it's the right thing to do to go and talk to them. And you did. Mm-hmm. And she came back, and of course
I was a mess when I came back because it didn't go well at all. But I knew it wasn't going
to
go well.
They wanted to kill you.
My dad got the gun out.
But it wasn't the greatest scene in the world.
No, it was a tough moment. But
and then we got married. Were they there?
No, none of my family was there.
Yeah, they didn't come to the wedding.
No.
So our wedding was on a Sunday. It was on church service.
Yep. Pastor Dave taught on marriage, and then he said, hey, by the way, I got a surprise. Bo and Sylvia are going to get married. Come on up. And we got married.
That's right. And you wore this beautiful, like, dark blue dress. Mm-hmm. Looked like some Hawaiian
queen. We didn't have
queen,
a thing.
Man.
I'm telling you. I borrowed the dress from my sister. His mom gave us rings that were hers. And
this is my real dad's wedding ring. He gave me that because he was a dud in marriage, dude. He biffed it big time. But they still had the rings.
Yeah.
So they gave us the rings.
They gave us the rings. Yep. And, you know, we had about like $950 in the bank between the both of us.
Yep.
And it was the best thing we could have ever done.
Yeah. It was like so awesome. Mm-hmm. I remember us sitting in the back of some car. Mm-hmm. Someone was driving us somewhere, and I remember
I think it was your brother.
Yeah, and I remember just like being in La La Land. I was just like, "Wow, this is amazing!" I mean, it was just so cool.
Yeah.
And me and you kept saying like, "It's just me, you, and Jesus." That's what this is about: me, you, Jesus. And we just kept reiterating that, like, "This is me, you, and Jesus." So, were your friends happy about you making the decision?
No. No.
The people that stood up, all the girls with their beautiful dresses, all in the same color.
Because
that's
bummed.
What you do at a wedding, right?
Yeah. No, they were
not
pretty
ours.
Bummed. No, they were bummed.
No, they all had a poo-poo look, huh?
Yeah. But, I mean, it's to be expected. I mean, just within a month of me giving my life to Christ, I was just doing whatever I was doing. I mean, I get it.
Yeah.
I get why people were worried for us.
Did you feel that you were just trading up for something way better? And you were just, that's how I felt. I felt just like, man, dude, I'm not giving up nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like, dude, I'm me and Syl's so special, so cool. She's always been so cool. And I just thought, man, this is the best.
Yeah.
So we went, and then before we end, because you guys don't want to hear the rest. We have so many stories, me and Syl. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, our stuff, because we've had so many crazy times. But let's talk a little bit about reconciliation. Because that's been powerful in both of our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, we have been blessed. We've seen so many things reconciled, families reconciled. Mm-hmm. How did that happen with you and your parents?
Well, God threw us together after the earthquake, and we were forced to live together.
But before then, what do we do? What do we always do? We always would pray.
Oh, yeah. In Northridge, we would pray that we would reconcile with my family and that we wouldn't have to raise a kid in L.A.
Two things.
Yeah, that was like
two
our
things
constant
we prayed for all the time.
Yeah.
Check this out. Listen to this.
Two things
we prayed all the stinking time.
Yeah, it was a constant prayer, and there was just so much peace in praying that, you know, and little by little my parents would like come over for dinner or something, you know, and it was uncomfortable, but it was cool. It was
we were always excited. I remember we were always like, oh my God, dude, what's going to happen? Like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
You know, we were always like so pumped about it.
So, but the constant prayer was every night, you know, please help us reconcile, and, you know, and if we have a family, let us not raise him here, you know?
And then January, like, 14th came.
Yeah, and 4 months later, January, the earthquake hit in Northridge. We were right in the epicenter. We lost our place, and my job moved around, and we had to go live with my parents, who just sold their house three days before the earthquake, and we're moving here.
And we saw this as, like, when the earthquake hit, and we knew we had a... We couldn't stay there because FEMA was coming in, the Federal Emergency Medical or whatever management thing was coming in. We knew we had to get out of the place. And Sylvia's parents were like, you guys could come if you need to and stay with us until we move to Tucson. And we were like,
yeah, because
this is it.
They didn't go to my wedding. You're only talking about 4 months difference of just being told these horrible things prior to getting married. And so for us to be thrown together like that was pretty incredible.
And we saw it as so cool.
Yeah.
Like, I remember we never looked at it as like, oh, what a bummer. Me and you were always so positive. Yeah. We were always just like, dude, God's doing something.
Yeah.
And then what crazy thing happened? We're in their house.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? What did you find out?
Oh, well, I had to go to the doctor because I got hit in the head by I don't know what. And so I went to the doctor and he wanted to do an x-ray on my head. And he goes, I have to do a pregnancy test no matter what, because you're going to do an x-ray. So I'm like, okay. I was pregnant. And so I couldn't do the x-ray. And I come home and I'm like, I'm pregnant, you know.
It's my bad.
And so my parents are, and so my mom says, and you're happy about that? And I'm like, yeah, I'm like so happy about this. She's like, but you just lost your place and you have nowhere to live. And then my dad's like, come move with us. And my mom's like looking at him like, what the heck did you just ask?
And I remember you coming back and you're like, and she's like, I'm pregnant. And I was just like, dude, that is awesome. Holy moly. Like, it was so crazy because what are the two things we've been praying for?
Reconciliation. And no babies in LA.
No babies in LA County, LA anywhere. And all of a sudden her dad's like, hey, you want to move to Tucson? And me and Sylvia are sitting there just like, dude, God is amazing. Amazing. And it's so cool that we at that young age had eyes to see.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where I think of all these little areas where we could have went like, oh, no. Like, we could have always said something, you know?
Yeah.
But we were so free in our hearts, you know? We just had such a, you know, we weren't using each other. We were no longer using drugs. We saw Jesus in such a beautiful way. We still do, which is great. That we just saw everything as the hand of God.
Mm-hmm.
And so when your dad said, hey, you want to come to Tucson, we were just like, whoa. So me and Syl then really had to pray. Huh?
Yeah.
And we ended up, what, coming out here with him, huh?
Mm-hmm.
And what was that like for you?
That was tough. That was like the hardest 10 months of living with them. But it was the process to reconcile. And it was a lot of talking and rehashing and going over things and... It's definitely like a needed time, but it was tough. It was
What are the things that you had to learn just to reconcile with your family? What are some of the things that you had to just deal with? Like, as far as like, how'd you do it?
I had to sit and listen and not run away and take some things on the chin, because some things they said were true. And I had to finally speak. You know, I never spoke growing up, so it was one of my dad's fears of me ending up. He always thought, and he says this today, like, if he was standing here, he would say it. He would say, I always worried for Sylvia the most because she never spoke, and I knew she was going to marry a bum, and they were going to be living on the street with kids, and they'd have nothing. You know, that's how he saw me. I was like, wow, you know. And so he's just excited I speak today, you know, and he always says that, you know, like.
Yeah. What's our relationship like with him nowadays?
Oh, it's awesome. Like, it's incredibly amazing. you know, just to have my dad call me up and, you know, be like, oh, I was just thinking of you and I love you and, you know, want to do breakfast and hanging out with my mom and even being able to find joy in our past, even though there was a lot of trauma, you know, how God replaced all those years with joy because of where we're at today.
Yeah.
And, you know, and me being able to take care of them and just share our lives.
You know, from my perspective, you never criticized your parents. You never said, look at what you did. I mean, it was amazing how you could just let go and just love them and just love them and just love them and love them. And even when we lived with them and they would come at you at times, you would just love them and love them. And it was amazing. I mean, it impacted their life so much that her family, her mother and father, started reading the Bible and going to church and growing in their walk with Jesus. And then I baptized my mom. We baptized her sister. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that crazy? I mean, her whole family comes to know Jesus Christ through all this. I mean, radical. All through this. Now you talk to her parents, they love Jesus. They love the Word. You can sit there and talk about the Word. We can talk about old things. I mean, it is amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Just literally amazing. And me and Sylvia can't boast about it. We don't, you know, when me and Syl kind of think about what happened and what we did, and we kind of go, I don't know. We just trusted the Lord. You know, and it's kind of like Jesus says, if you have faith of a mustard seed, you can move mountains. And mountains in the Bible is always governments. So Jesus, I think he's saying you can move people. You know, things can change. You know, but you gotta believe, you gotta trust. And by God's grace, he gave us a measure of faith to keep doing that, even with our kids. And oh man, we have so many stories, you know, and some of you guys have heard some more, but you know, if your life is kind of sucky, you know, maybe it's because we're not trusting the Lord, you know? And that's what me and Syl always go back to, is are we trusting God, you know, in our life? And whenever we found ourselves not doing so well, it's always because we just aren't, you know? But me and Syl's been so blessed. We haven't had, just in our marriage, we just haven't had really many hiccups. It's just been kind of rolling.
No, it's been other people.
Yeah, I mean, even and you know, I had to come to Sylvia and confess pornography to my wife, you know, and what was that like? That was the breaker, man. You were like, man, dude, you suck, you piece of trash.
No. No, and
you
this
watch
is how
porn?
No.
What kind of dude are you?
No. I think anything that Beau and I have had to experience together, it was everything that all the reconciliation and what we went through with our families was in preparation for confessions like that.
Yeah.
Like if God could take us through that, that's not going to be what's going to break me. You know, that's just not going to be it. This is going to be one where I'm going to be like, wow, look what I get to do with you. We're going to walk through this. I mean, that's just what I get to do. You know, it's not a have to, it's not a job. You know,
What a cool woman, huh? What a cool woman to go to and be able to say, hey, you know, to struggle with something so deep as that, you know, I know a lot of us struggle with that, but to struggle with something in your marriage as a pastor, as a minister, and go to your wife and say, hey, I struggle with this, and she just is like, I'm with you, man. I'm like, what? I'm with you. I'm like, dang. Dude, that's amazing. What kind of faith does it take to do that? How many women would do that in the church? What's your guess? man, the faith that God gave her is outstanding. I mean, I was blown away. And I hope you are too. Because that's radical, right? She could have shot me down like that. She could have shot me down like that and just said, you know what? I'm hurt. I'm this. I'm that. Me, I. Not once have you ever gone any close in that direction. Stinking amazing. Phenomenal. Dude, when you die, I'm going to make a candle. It's going to say,
so I am Saint dying first.
Sylvia.
I'm dying first.
Well, we've already talked about it. We'll make sure that.
Yeah, make sure. You know,
but
first.
Saint Sylvia. I thought a candle, a real cool candle. I'll sell them in fries and everything. That'd be awesome. Anyway, guys, thanks for hearing some of her story. Give her a hand. She's awesome. Amazing.